sabrosura pa ti que que.
Hello, everyone. This is Pam, the Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 354 of Café con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Liz Hurtado. Liz is a national field manager at Moms Clean Air Force, supporting the Eco Madres program in its mission to empower and mobilize Latino communities to fight for clean air, equitable climate change solutions, and protections from toxic chemicals. Liz's background lies in the intersectionality of health equity and has spent years amplifying the need for diverse representation in health research through community engagement, education, and advocating for language justice. As a mother of four, Liz centers her work around protecting the most vulnerable and fighting for children's environmental health protections. Listeners, this episode with Liz was really informative because we talked about the various ways that communities like ours get affected in climate. Now, I do want to clarify, we just had an interview with Isabel from Eco Madres también, and we wanted to bring Liz for Earth Month. And so as we are entering Earth Month, and in April, we are talking a lot about the environment, we wanted to bring this conversation again because I think it's important to cover the various aspects in which we are affected. Y bueno, sin más, aquí está mi conversación con Liz. Liz, welcome to Café con Pam.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Yes, I'm excited to talk to you. So the first pregunta that we ask is, what is your heritage?
I am Peruvian American. I was born in Peru, but moved to the States at the age of 6. So consider myself American as well.
For sure. What made your family decide to come?
Yeah, so really it was my mom's career. You know, she had an opportunity to accept a position here in the Washington, D.C. metro area. So we moved to Maryland at age 6, and that's pretty much where I lived most of my life. But now, as of 3 years ago, I'm based in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Still on the East Coast.
Yes.
And have you gone back to Peru?
I have, yes. We were fortunate enough to travel, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3 years throughout my childhood. And now that I'm a mom myself, I have 4 kids. So definitely strive to take them back and learn all the things about our beautiful country whenever we can.
That's awesome. How was it for you to return? How old were you when you went back the first time?
Oh, it wasn't far from, you know, the time that we moved to the United States, maybe a year or two after. Not for the greatest or happiest reasons. My grandmother died soon after, so we went back for that. But then, yeah, every other time it was, you know, to visit family, it wasn't quite vacation mode all the time. It was, you know, hopping around from aunt to grandmother to everyone who we hadn't seen those years and just spending time. So, I mean, it's been beautiful. But as I got older, you know, wanted to explore more of the country. It's such a hugely diverse and rich country. So now we're really taking advantage of, like, hopping around to different departments and different cities so we can explore more.
Nice. That's awesome because I could totally relate to the having to hop and visit the tías and the primos and the, like, all the people. For me, I grew up in Mexico City, and so it's gotten less, I have less friends there now. Yeah. But it used to be that I was literally going from family to friends, and I'm like, isn't this supposed to be relaxing? And then you need a vacation from your vacation. Yeah,
exactly.
So you grew up in DC, and how do you get into this field that you're in?
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, a linear path by any means. You know, I didn't study anything within the environmental climate space. Really, my background is more in, like, project management, marketing. And through my professional experience, I got into community engagement, which is what I found out to be my true passion. I love connecting with people, be that, you know, intermediary between the need and the solutions and see how I can help tell their stories. And so my focus for the past 4 or 5 years had been really in the health equity or public equity space, working to support a health research program and bringing more diversity into health research with a particular focus on getting Latino communities comfortable with the idea of sharing health data. And then that translated to this opportunity that arose in me participating in an environmental department agency project at my previous job, where it was kind of like a bittersweet feeling. They're like, you're too good at what you're doing right now. We want to keep you there. And I'm like, but my passion is in the environment. This is such a great opportunity. So that kind of sparked a moment for me where I'm like, I need to follow my calling. I need to, you know, really dive into this space head in, forget my fears that I may not have the traditional experience or education or knowledge. You know, I'll do what I can. And it just so happens that, you know, I kind of had my, not a vision board per se, but like my visionary list of like some key organizations in this space that I really was hoping to find a position in. And this opportunity with Moms Clean Air Force came by, and it was the perfect mix of like my professional experience with my passion and environment and my whole identity as a mother, you know, all combined into one, which was so unique, right? Because it's not just a job, it's a passion, which I can actually wake up every day and feel like I'm doing something meaningful and actually care to spend all of my time, like invest all of my time in. So it was, like I said, not linear by any means, but it was what was meant to be for me.
We're going to dissect that. So when you go into PM, marketing, all that stuff, when do you discover that you care about the environment? Or was that always a thing?
Yeah, no, I can take that back to when I was very little. I mean, that has always been a passion of mine, just my interconnected with nature, you know, my need to be outdoors. You know, I never wanted to stay inside. And I know kids nowadays, you know, are on their phones or on their screens. But for us, you know, in my childhood, we were also on our Nintendos and all these things, or computers, but I always wanted to be outdoors, whether it was, you know, riding my bike or roller skating and scraping my elbows. I mean, I needed to be immersed in that. And as I grew older, I found myself needing to be even more connected. So I would always travel to the mountains, or, you know, living in Maryland, I was about 2.5 hours away drive to the beach. Mm. But I would do that, you know, in any given day, because I needed to be closer to the water. I needed to be more immersed in that environment, not just from afar. So it's always been something that I felt has been a calling for me, to take care of nature, to be one with nature, to reconnect with our roots. And I know a lot of this has to do with our heritage, especially for me growing up in Peru. You know, I guess people don't really consider Lima or see Lima as a desert, but it's a desert. It's just a city built in a desert, and we're a coastal city as well. So having that mix of environments, getting the opportunity to travel into the rainforest, into the Amazon, I mean, these are experiences that live with you, right? And so kind of that innate passion to take care of our world has always lived with me. And then as I grew older and started seeing how much of a crisis we're in, I was like, I can't sit back and just watch this happen. I need to see where I can fit in, what role I can take in helping to address this or helping to mitigate this in any way that's in my power. So that was kind of the jumping point for me.
Do you think going back to Peru influenced your love for nature? Because for me, I grew up in Mexico City, and to your point of like, we had Nintendos, and, you know, it was kind of like that generation where like, oh, tech is coming in. And living and existing in a place that, one, perhaps technology is not as accessible as it is here. Two, the city infrastructure is built different. And even I've not been to Lima, but in La Ciudad de Mexico, por ejemplo, there's, I mean, we can argue here, but it's kind of like a practice, and maybe in Lima is similar, where people go to the plaza and then you hang out, like, because it's such a Catholic place. In Mexico, por ejemplo, you go to misa and then afuera hay un parquecito and then you just hang out, and it's a thing that it just kind of like you do. And so do you think, having gone back to Peru so much, kind of like instilled this like be outside thing, like it was probably in you already, but like also the environment influenced?
Yeah, definitely. You know, going back and seeing how richly, you know, geographically diverse Peru is, definitely is something that instilled that curiosity from a very early age, like what else is out there that I don't know? What else can I experience? But if we're talking about an influencer in my life, I mean, it was always my mom. My mom, from all the various stories that she's told me of her childhood and into her, you know, educational and professional experiences, she's always sought out those opportunities where she could travel. You know, if it meant like, hey, I'm going to study for this one test that's going to give me a scholarship to, you know, travel to this other country, she would seek those out specifically so that she could see what else is out there. And so we're fortunate enough, you know, when I came around and my brother came around, that she would take us with her. And she would always plan, you know, weekend getaways whenever we had a little break. And, you know, living in the Maryland, D.C. area, we have our mountains, right? So she would take us to Luray Cavern. She would take us to the mountains. She would plan, you know, ski trips, which was not very common for us Latinos then. It's becoming more common now. But like, she was always the one kind of spearheading these adventurous moments for us. And I know my brother feels the same. You know, he is also very much like me in that he needs that piece of nature always fulfilling his life.
I love that you mentioned the ski trips, because it is, and even I would argue that to this day, it's not super, like, you see more brown people, pero todavía no es like a thing. I'm assuming back then it was probably really not a thing where you saw a lot of people look like you. Did you ever have conversations with your mom about it?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, my mom's best friend, you know, the friend that she grew up with in Peru, she moved to the States a few years before us, and we ended up in the same exact area as she did. And they had a home. She married an American here in the U.S. and they had a seasonal home in the mountains of Pennsylvania. So that was when we first started going, and it kind of became a yearly thing. And yeah, you know, we were the only brown people there. And to this day, like, I just did a ski trip with my husband in February. And I think perhaps we saw two or three others. And it was like that moment, we're like, oh my God, hey, like, we're waving each other down from across the mountain because
I see
it's
you.
Such a rare sight. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really great that we are making those spaces. You know, there's communities and organizations like Latino Outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
Really emphasizes that we belong in these spaces, mm-hmm. right? And it makes it easy for us to get back out there, like understanding that there's so many parts of the country and so many communities that may not even have fresh air to step outside their homes, right? So, but how do we make the nature accessible to them? How do we make or break down those barriers for folks to get outdoors where we truly belong, or where we deserve to take up space?
For sure, especially because traditionally in the U.S., communities of color don't have parks. And so the culture of being outside, now bringing it back to the U.S., it's almost like by design, it's like they want to keep us inside.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these historic practices go back so far back in our history, in that we've, you know, black and brown people have been pushed into these spaces that are detrimental to their health, you know, to their well-being as well. You know, we didn't get a pick to where we were going to be setting up our communities, but here we are, and we're surrounded by all these multiple sources of pollution that prevent us from going outside. And in many cases, we don't even have the information available to know what's in our air. You know, is it even healthy to be outdoors? Can I take my kid to the park today? But I don't know if the air quality is good enough to take him. You know,
For sure.
And these are fears that people across the country here in the US live with, because there isn't the data available to them. There aren't the efforts to make that data accessible or in their language, right? And so that's something that, you know, we certainly advocate for, to make sure that there is greater transparency across the board in terms of what people are breathing in, what's in their water, you know, because we want people to thrive. We don't want people to have to think about these things day in and day out. We just want people to live and experience and, you know, have these positive experiences that others in the U.S. are experiencing currently. So I know we'll get into a little bit more of my work in Ecomadres, but that's really kind of at the center of our goals. It's empowering people to live the lives that they were meant to live, right? And how do we do that? It's through empowering them through using their voice, right? Like, we are, we have been forced into these spaces, but that doesn't mean that has to be the end, right? We can show up for our communities. We can bring our voices and our solutions to these tables and spaces and demand that these things are rectified for our community so that we can thrive.
For sure. Totally. And to bring it back to, we'll get to Ecomadres, but to bring it back to your story. So you go into the corporate space and it's kind of like your lifestyle is you like the outdoors, you do things outside, blah, blah, blah. Just like your mom instilled this in you, as you began your family, did you also begin like, okay, kids, we're going to go outside? Did you have any like, I don't know, I would say rules, but like, you know, parameters of being outside with your kids?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there weren't necessarily any boundaries or limits or things like that in terms of what we were going to do. You know, I definitely love giving my kids the freedom to choose on what we're doing or taking part in those decisions, right? But absolutely, my daughter, when I had her, we were living in Miami at that time, right? So
wow.
We were steps away from the water, and whenever I could, you know, we were down on Biscayne Bay or wherever it may be, just soaking it all in. And then moved back to Maryland, had my son, and, you know, we're close to the mountains, we're near Great Falls Park, and, you know, I would strap him on my back, and I have my toddler in hand, because they're just 4 years apart, and we just go hiking, you know. I was a single mother for a huge part of their upbringing, but that was always the time where we could just be, you know. We didn't have to think about finances or, you know, where are we going to live or any of those, you know, stressors in our lives living as a single mother. But that was just our escape. You know, that's really where we could reconnect, release anything that we were holding on to. Hopefully they don't remember any of that, but, you know, that's where I could just be and just enjoy in their childhood. And to this day, that's what they ask, you know. Just yesterday, despite my awful allergies, despite my son being on, you know, allergy medications, they're like, hey, can we go to the cherry blossoms? And I'm like packing up my tissues and taking medicine. I'm like, yep, let's go.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. So they love it. They, you know, whether they realize it or not, you know, it was a huge part of their childhood, which is the same reason why they love it today.
Y entonces the research and like, did you know before you moved into Ecomadres, did you know like everything that happens, por ejemplo, 25 million kids travel via bus and the majority of buses use diesel as the fuel. The other one that, which we've talked about, low-income communities and people of the global majority typically have the biggest, y lo estoy traduciendo, por eso, las comunidades de bajos ingresos y las de color, como las latinas, tienen más probabilidades de vivir en áreas con la peor calidad de aire y son más propensos a sufrir y morir de enfermedades como asma. Did you know all of that? Like, was that something that was in your radar? Were your kids the catalyst of like, let's see what's happening in the environment?
When I tell you my mind was blown, I mean, I can't even put into words, you know, what I felt in those first months in joining this team, with all this data coming my way, and, you know, understanding that connection between our environmental harms or pollution and our health, especially our children's health, right? Because they're so much more vulnerable to all these pollutants. I cried. I, you know, went down the rabbit hole of greater research. I held my kids tighter, you know, like it was all these emotions because I didn't know. You know, I was very privileged growing up. I was in a, you know, majority white communities as I grew up into my adulthood. So we had the privilege of living in spaces where we had easy access to green spaces, you know? We didn't live right in front of a highway with all these pollutant vehicles clogging up our air. We didn't experience that. And I didn't know. I didn't know until I really dove into, you know, more of the health research when I was working at my previous job and understanding the inequities that exist amongst our communities. And then at that, in that moment, you know, I was learning about genetics, right? Our lifestyle factors and kind of sort of our environmental factors, but I didn't really dive too much into that until I joined the Comadres and I saw the spark, the stark differences in what we experience across the country. And it's not just, you know, communities of color, it's also low-income communities, right? And that can be our neighbors right next door. It doesn't, it's not something far away, which a lot of people are like, oh, we never knew this happened. It's happening next door. We just happen to live in this little block that is surrounded by trees that, you know, has the highway miles down that way. But that was really a, you know, a space where I could be like, well, here living in my privileged state, you know, I'm in a position where I can help others bring those stories to light. You know, I can help kind of be that conduit to them identifying all the wrongs that they've, you know, been living with and help to reach those people who have the power to make decisions, to hear their stories and to really reflect on the state of this country and what we can be doing better.
Totally. Okay, this is a great time to take a coffee break and then we'll return with more questions. So, Liz, do you drink coffee?
I do. Yeah, I cannot get my day started without coffee.
How do you drink your coffee?
It depends. So I normally, I love breakfast. It's the, you know, I guess my favorite part of the day. I usually have a big, fulfilling breakfast, and it's usually salty.
Nice.
And so then my coffee is sweet. You know, a little bit of oat milk or almond milk and some sugar. On days where I choose to have like a, you know, Nutella and banana toast, which is super sweet, then I'll take my coffee black.
Oh, so you use it as balance.
It's balance.
Nice. I love that. On my end, I am drinking, today I'm drinking Four Sigmatic Balance. So typically I drink Think. So I've been using Four Sigmatic for a long time. I have tried other mushroom coffees and they're like anxiety galore. So I went back to the one that works, which is Four Sigmatic for me. And I have a code, Stay Shining, if you want to get 10% off.
Love that.
But today I'm drinking Balance, and that one, it has reishi and it has, I don't remember what's the other nootropic that it has, but basically it's not such a, like, it makes you super focused type of coffee. The Think one does. This one, it's more like, all right, chill, but you still have your coffee. And the reason why I'm drinking that one today is because yesterday I was the closing keynote for a conference, and so it was like super high energy, and so today I'm trying to like chill out, and that's why like I'm drinking my little Balance.
I'm going to need you to send me that link and code after this. Yes. I've tried Rise mushroom coffee. That's the one and only I tried. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stick to my regular coffee. So I'm open to trying new things.
So no shade to Rise, but that one is one that I literally, I don't mind the earthy flavor. So everyone complains like it tastes like dirt. Well, it is dirt. And so that I don't mind. But what happens to me is the effect. So I don't know what they put. I haven't looked into it, but I tried it for a week and it was literally like, it wasn't borderline panic attacks, but it was too much anxiety. And I was like, there's no way. Like, I cannot function like this. And so that one didn't work for me.
Yeah, that is so interesting how our bodies are so mm-hmm. different and react so differently. That one actually was better for me than coffee. I couldn't get past
the flavor.
The taste. Yep, that was me.
I know. Lots of people are like, it tastes like actual, like I'm literally eating the mushrooms of the earth. And I'm like, we probably are. So yeah, I understand. The flavor is a thing. But do you have a favorite coffee shop in Virginia?
Oh my gosh, yes. We have so many here. In my 3 years here, I still haven't gone to them all. But we are just about 15 minutes to the boardwalk. And they have a whole spread of coffees, maybe every two blocks. And there's this one, I think it's called Java Surf, if I'm not mistaken. But they have Hawaiian coffee and all different combinations that you can think of. And that has to be my favorite. Yeah, I don't think I had even tried Hawaiian coffee before then, but it was truly delicious.
I love that. You know, Hawaiian coffee doesn't get enough love, I don't think.
No, I haven't seen it before.
I know. I do like Hawaiian coffee. It's like specific. Pero, it's good. We do have a Hawaiian coffee shop here, and I drink their coffee from time to time, and it's good. But it's not like Colombian coffee or, you know, like that's like the standard, which, I mean, to their credit, like Colombian coffee is considered one of the best coffees.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So let's get back to the show. Okay, Liz. So how do you get this job at Eco Madres? ¿Cómo sucede?
A lot of Googling, a lot of time spent on LinkedIn and Indeed and all those search sites. I took my time. I really did take my time. I wanted to make sure that my, you know, next move was very intentional. You know, I didn't want to find myself in a position where I was feeling more of the, like, what am I doing here, right? Am I fully immersing myself in this career or is it just another job? So I was very, very intentional in my search. And again, when I read that job description, because I had never heard of Moms Clean Air Force before, but when I read that job description and, you know, I'm reading through the expectations and the requirements and all those things, I'm like, huh, I have some of that. Yep, have some of that. And sprinkled with my passion of environment and being a mom, I was like, this makes sense. I was like, this almost makes too much sense to be true, right? And I know we as women often go through this period of like imposter syndrome, right? Like we don't meet all the qualifications that they're asking for. So I'm just not going to apply for that. And that was my case for like half a second. And I'm like, you know what? I'm done with that. I've done this far too often in my life where I'm like, I don't know that that is the right fit for me or, you know, fear of being turned down. I'm like, you know what? I have nothing to lose. I need to just jump in. And I did. I interviewed, met some incredible people through that interview. And I was like, yeah, this is it. I was like, this is really where I want to be. And they, I guess, felt the same. So they hired me. And here I am years later.
And what is your role?
I'm a national field manager. And I specifically focus on our Latino engagement program called Eco Madres. So as a national field manager, I work with our team from various states across the country in, you know, what their local or state initiatives are, how do we amplify that at the national level? And with Eco Madres, you know, obviously it's through a Latino or Spanish language lens. How do we reach our communities? How do we make sure that we're being intentional and bringing them into these spaces? You know, how do we provide the educational component so that everybody has this level of understanding about the connections between environment and our children's health and climate change so that they can take action and they can feel empowered to take action with us.
I love that. So I do want to talk about, because we recently released the episode with Isabel, who's also part of the Eco Madres team. And I love that we're having this follow-up because I'm like, oh, let's talk about this. So we got a comment on YouTube who said by the Liquid Llama, I'm Latino and the rainforest is thriving more than ever. I've been there and I can tell you that climate change is a lie. What would you say?
Breaks my heart to hear that. Because that's something, you know, we have to battle so often here in the U.S. where we face climate deniers, you know, and
why do you think that happens?
Greed. It's greed. It's people saying, well, if I admit that this is happening, that means I need to do something about it. And that might mean
my comfort's going to be disturbed.
Yeah. You know, I can't speak for everybody, obviously, but that's my understanding of that. You know, I can't find another possible reason, right? We're talking about children's health. We're talking about families' livelihoods being destroyed by corporate greed, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't see another possible reason for people not to think about future generations or what we're doing to our world. You know, it's a shared world and people feel okay just sticking with the status quo and not taking action. So.
Totally. Yo creo que I think, and tell me if you agree, I think what happens a lot is how the narrative is twisted in different ways. Just to be fair, the narrative could be twisted to one side and to the other. And muchas veces, especialmente en Spanish media, uno, porque there's not that many outlets en español. Dos, porque who's funding those media outlets. Y tres, pues es la narrativa que, like, what's the narrative that they want people to understand? Y muchas veces lo que yo veo, por ejemplo, es que Spanish-speaking media, they cover something, and y luego en inglés yo lo veo, and I'm like, completely different.
You nailed it. Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why at Eco Madres, you know, that's honestly a big component of what we strive to do is getting our voice and our stories and our reasoning out there into the media, specifically Spanish language media, because there is so much misinformation happening. And it always happens even more going into an election year, right? Mm-hmm. And we know that there's all these competing narratives. And so we want to make sure that our narrative is front and center. We want to make sure people are, you know, empowered with the facts and, you know, potential solutions and inviting them to be part of the solution making so that, people take ownership of, you know, those next steps, what they're going to do with that information. We all know, and we should know by now, that we can't trust everything we hear on social or on media, yet our brain just tends to function that way. And we sometimes do get trapped into those narratives because they come at you strong. And that's the reality of it, you know, unless we fully remove ourselves from those spaces, which is impossible nowadays. Yes. We're going to be confronted with a lot of misinformation. And if you're not the type that will, you know, fact check or follow up to make sure that what was said was true, you're just going to believe it. And so that's why we really hope that, you know, as we're building out this community of Eco Madres, and it's not just madres, it's padres, abuelos, tías, you know, anyone who's invested in protecting children's health, we hope that more of these voices come forward and say, hey, this is the truth. This is what we're experiencing. This is what we need you all to know so that you can help us in this fight to protect our communities.
What would you say to people? Porque siempre es así como que, well, when we talk about climate change, it just feels like this overwhelming, like it's so much. Pero I think many times what we don't realize is that we can start with our community. We can start with, just like with the podcast with Isabel, you know, we should start with a park. In honor of her mom. And so what would be the three things that people can start getting involved with? And I cannot believe the diesel thing with the buses, the school buses. Like, it's something that, I mean, I don't have kids, but I have nieces and nephews. And just the thought that they're smelling the fumes from diesel every time they go and come from school is wild.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's exactly it, right? It's like once you have this piece of information, you want to take that next step to get other people informed, right? Like for me, finding out those staggering statistics about what's in our air or what's happening to our kids or how these environmental pollutants are affecting their health and it's gonna, you know, stay with them through their livelihoods was what propelled me to take action and start speaking about it more. A lot of times in our communities, especially in our Latino communities, we have so many different things that we are worried about or have to think about on the day to day that climate change and environment is always pushed to the last thing. But what we've learned now through all this polling and, you know, through surveys is that Latinos are really concerned about climate change. We may just not be so open to speaking about it, which is why people tend to believe that we don't care. But that's not true at all. Not true at all. The numbers tell us a different story, that we are concerned. We see it happening. We just often feel like we are not in a position to do something about it. So we leave it to others to do something about it. But, you know, what I would encourage people as like a very, very initial step is talk about it. Talk about it. And sometimes it's going to be uncomfortable spaces, like, you know, at your family dinner table. It's kind of sometimes like a conversation killer. And, you know, I've been in this position many times.
Why are we using styrofoam plates?
Yes. You know, we don't have to be judgy, but, you know, we can introduce those topics so that people realize that it's not a faraway thing. It's not something that we need to think about 10 years from now. It's happening now. We need to talk about it now. And we need to think about solutions together. And it really does start with conversations. You know, we've had multiple people come through Ecomadres sharing their stories, right? And one particular one struck out, in which an environmental activist now, but back then she was just a little girl growing up in her home in Los Angeles. And little to their knowledge, you know, they had this oil well polluting in their backyard. And they would, you know, smell all these terrible odors. Their kids were getting sick. And so moms after work would just, you know, gather together and say, like, what's happening? What are you experiencing? What have you heard? You know, and they would start piecing together all this information and finally connected the dots that it was that oil well behind their neighborhood that was literally harming their kids.
Whoa.
And so that's how they band together, because they started those conversations, right? So if people don't know, they don't know, and they're not going to act. So that was a long-winded way of saying, talk about it. Start talking about climate and environment and making those connections, because it's not easy to connect those dots. And you can be that, you know, conduit to igniting kind of that fire in people to take action.
And Ecomadres tiene mucha información en inglés y en español. And so, especially for the other things that Earth Day, I think, needs to be every day.
Yes.
Because, yeah, well, we are taking action and there's a lot of conversation and buzz around it. Mm-hmm. It's what do we do every day to make sure that we're not adding to the issue.
Yeah, I love that. And just like Earth Day should be every day, Hispanic Heritage Month should be every day, right?
Right.
And I think it's great, you know, to have these events pop up in our community where we can go and find what makes sense for us to do, right? It's not easy to identify what more we can be doing. Like, yes, we're conserving energy at home by turning off our lights when we're not in the room. Yes, we're recycling the bags, you know, we're exchanging a plastic bag for now a reusable bag. Like, we're doing all these little things that are within our power, within our knowledge to do. But there's a whole world of other things that we can be doing, right? Mm-hmm. And so at a large scale here in the US, we have the power to use our voice and speak to our elected officials and saying, this is what we need to happen to protect our families, our communities, our livelihoods. And so at Ecomadres, we kind of make that or break that down into more digestible steps. Like perhaps when you join, the first step you do is learn about this topic that may be in your backyard, right? Some pollutant refinery, let's say, in your backyard. And we have a petition for you to learn a little bit more about it. We have a template laid out for you, and you just input your information and you send it to your elected official, mm-hmm. right? So it's a easy to do step to introduce you into the world of advocacy if you've never advocated for something before. Or then, you know, you join a webinar of ours, and then we arm you with this opportunity to testify in front of the EPA, right? Like, the average person doesn't think that they can do that.
Right.
Right. It's the scholars and the
Latinos
holding the PhDs. Exactly. Latinos. You know, we don't think that that's within our rights to do, but it is.
Correct.
You know, these folks out here are elected to hear us out and to work for us.
They work for us.
They work for us.
Y eso es algo súper importante, perdón que te interrumpa, que creo que we need to stress it more and more and more and more y mucho más, porque calladita culture, por ejemplo, puts people in authority as like they're on a pedestal and we can't touch them type thing. And to your point of literally what you just said, es importante recordar y muchas veces educar, because they don't know, especially our parents or grandparents, no saben que elected officials work for us. No saben que, like, the mayor of your city, like, their role is to listen to what you need to say, because they can't virtually be everywhere. And so the voices of the people that exist in the spaces are, I don't want to say supposed to, but, you know, we also have this responsibility to go back to them and say, este es un problema y necesita resolverse, because they won't know that. They can't virtually be everywhere.
That's right. And I know a lot in our community, you know, may fear kind of ruffling feathers or calling attention to themselves for various reasons, and one of them being, you know, your status in this country. But we can engage in civic duty in various different ways. You know, it doesn't matter whether you know, you have papers or not. You can still take action in various ways. And that's kind of where we come in to support you in that, in providing the understanding of what is possible, you know, within your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're here to just make that lift into civic engagement and to sharing your voice and your stories a little bit easier. You know, at Ecomadres, we really want to break those barriers in our participation as active, you know, citizens or residents here in this country, and telling our stories about why it is so important to fight for stronger environmental protections, you know, for our kids, but for our communities that have been pushed to the side for far too long. And so we really want to just be that resource to our communities, help people feel empowered in stepping up, stepping forward. And we're here, you know, to be a guide or a resource. So we encourage everyone to reach out to us, whether it's via our socials at Ecomadres or on our website, ecomadres.org. Just, you know, hit us with your questions, with your concerns. We're here to chat. And yeah, we hope that you reach out to us.
Totally. And what I love is that people don't have to do it alone. Porque muchas veces what could stop people back is the like literally what you said, repercussions, ruffling feathers. Pero when you have a group, and when there's, you know, have to be the face, eso puede como ayudar a que la gente tome más acción, no?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, power in the people, right? We can take Dolores Huerta as an example. You know, she was a leader in so many fights to bring justice to our communities and to women's rights as well, right? And so just looking at those examples of folks that have come before us, you know, when you come together as a group, as a community, we are stronger together. And definitely love that you mentioned that, because that is part of what we hope to do here, right? Build community, build not just understanding, but build safety in these spaces where we might not have felt comfortable before. And so what we know to be true, and this is across the board in all our, you know, environmental and climate movement, is that there is power in collective action. It can feel so heavy to take any one of these topics on by yourself. You know, it can bring on so many different feelings of anxiety, of overwhelming, of, you know, you name it. To some, it can even lead to depression because you don't know what the future holds. But when you come together as a collective unit, you can rely on each other for support, whether that's in terms of just like talking about it and releasing those feelings, or brainstorming as to what action we're going to take together. You know, it really does help to fortify you in the action that you're going to take. And so mm-hmm. definitely encourage folks to come together for this fight.
I love that. Tell us all the places and spaces where people can find about you, about Ecomadres, all the things, all the links.
Yes. Well, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Ecomadres. On Facebook, we're Ecomadres USA. And certainly reach us via our website. It's www.ecomadres.org. You can also reach me directly via those social channels at L. Liz Hurtado. And we are just so happy to be in this space chatting with you about these super important things. We know it's not easy to talk about. It's not, you know, something that we do often, but I do hope that folks start to talk about this a little bit more. You know, come and join us in discussion. We are always here and happy to help.
Especially those who may not believe it's true. No, como ese comentario, like, the rainforest is thriving. What?
Our rainforest is hurting.
Yeah.
It may be true that there's progress, you know, in certain spaces, but that doesn't mean that it's happening everywhere. And we need to continue to fight for protections for our environment, for our rainforests, for our people. So.
For sure. Liz, last few questions. Do you have a remedio that you want to share with us?
Yeah, and it's probably so timely right now as I'm battling this throat thing. Probably allergies, but might be something else creeping up. It's jarabe de cebolla. And I know many in my, I guess, region, you know, in Peru, Bolivia, do this, but it's so simple as just, you know, mashing cebolla in a mug or something and just mashing it down with a little bit of sugar. And you just spoon that into your mouth like syrup or like honey, kind of. It's kind of that consistency.
Nice.
But that's soothing. I mean, that is something that gets me through the day probably more than any of the medicines that I have tried. And I've tried them all. So, yes.
I mean, this is where remedios work. Remedios is the first medicine ever existed.
Exactly right.
And do you have a quote or mantra that you live by?
This is something that I started telling my kids very early on. Even before, you know, I joined this space, it's that they can make a difference in the world. You know, I used to be that cutesy mom that would write it on like the bathroom mirror or whatever, but now they do this themselves. You know, we are so happy to be growing in this space where self-care is now at the forefront. And so my kids come up with their own things, you know, whether it's like, I am beautiful or I am enough. Or I am powerful. Like, all of these are so important reminders. It doesn't have to be just one a day. You can hype yourself up all day long, because the more we say it, and especially when we say it out loud, the more it holds true. Words are powerful. You know, the same way negative words will impact us negatively, the more we say these powerful, reaffirming, reassuring words, the more impact it will have on our day to day.
I support that. And the last question, do you have a productivity tip, trick, or tool?
Yes, I have quite a few. But two that I definitely do every day is, you know, one, I mentioned how breakfast is so important to me. But really, it's that whole first hour of my day that is so important. You know, as a working mother, there's so many different things and to-do lists that I have to try to complete in any day. But before I jump into that, before I even open up my, you know, email inbox from work, I take that hour for just me time. You know, I've shipped the kids off onto the bus. Hopefully they all have their lunch boxes. And then I take time to cook myself a nice breakfast, you know, sit with my hot cup of coffee and not let it get cold. Mm-hmm. You know, I might even step outside, let the dogs, you know, play around in the backyard and just soak in some sun. But whatever it is, I take that hour to myself, because I know I won't have that again in the next, you know, 23-hour period.
That's right.
And then the second thing that I do because, you know, we all know life can get overwhelming and we have all these lists. I break down those lists or that task of the day into very small, digestible tasks. So it can be this one large thing I got to do, but I break it down into tiny little micro bites and start with that first thing, you know, and it can be as easy as like, I don't know, find the number for that customer service representative, right? Like it has to be so small that I'm like, hey, I did that one thing. I feel accomplished, moving on to the next, right? But it kind of gives that little boost of dopamine. I'm like, yeah, I did something. And then I can continue. Because otherwise these large tasks can just feel so daunting and we're like, eh, we're just going to put it off till tomorrow. But for me, at least, that helps me boost my productivity because I feel like I accomplished something. So that's something that I do day to day.
I'm a recovering procrastinator. And so people come to me all the time for productivity. And I always tell them, if the quote task feels too much, it's a project. It's not a task.
Yes. Yes.
And so 100% with you, break it down into like teeny tiny bite-sized things, like open the notebook could be a thing, you know, like
honestly, yes.
Because we get, especially for me, as I have ADHD, and so it's the bigger the task, the less I want to do it. And so that breaking it into tiny little things, sometimes like my neurotypical people in my life, they look at my list and they're like, really? Really? That's, and I'm like, listen, it works for me. Don't judge
if
me.
If I could show you my notebook right now, I myself have ADHD. And what I learned, and this is another productivity tip perhaps for our neurodivergent audience, is whenever possible, either try to gamify something or make it visually appealing. So, you know, in my rolling to-do list for the day, at the top, I will have little hearts in different colors, right? Little hearts that will say breakfast, coffee, shower, medicine.
Yes.
You know, and as I go through each one of these tasks, I will fill in those little hearts and I color them in. And then I have like this must-do list, but then I also have like, what did I do for myself? And throughout the day, I'll just color this in. And it's just a visually appealing reminder for all the things that I have to do in my life. And as a someone with ADHD, that has really helped, you know, because everything else just sometimes seems mundane and just heavy. But that just makes it a little bit more lighthearted to get through the day.
Yes. Gamifying things is the best. And yeah, I like one day I'm going to create a video, like not a video game, but like some sort of maybe a video game to get people to get things done. Because with you 100%, when I do, I try to make my to-do list super fun as well. I have post-its. I use all the things. And, you know, it's like it makes a difference.
Absolutely.
Well, Liz, thank you so much for coming to Café con Pam. This was awesome. Thank you for your work. Definitely, listeners, check out Ecomadres. I do love the work that they do. It's a great space. You can find local groups for based on your location. So invite your abuelas, your tías, your mamás, tíos, everyone. Porque también hay recursos en español. I think it's something that's really key, especially porque lo que platicamos, you know, we get narratives from various different sides. And why not keep exploring and critical thinking, apply critical thinking to what we do. So, Liz, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure being on your show.
Thank you. Sabrosura pa ti que. Okay, listeners, that was my conversation. Please do screenshot, tag us, let us know what resonated with the episode. I hope you learned a lot from the various data points that we shared. We didn't share too much on the data, but I think I found Ecomadres is a great resource to just explore. It blew my mind to learn about the buses because as a child-free woman, thinking about the fuel that is used in school buses is not something that necessarily I have to think about because I don't have to deal with it on my daily life. However, I do have nieces and nephews, and the majority of them take the bus. And so because of the various realities that our community has to live with, like working parents or parents that have multiple jobs. And so we have to rely on public or school transport. Having this information, I think it's really important, because we don't know what we don't know. And so having information allows us to make more informed decisions. Y bueno, if it's your first time here, welcome to Café con Pam. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you stay. I hope you come back. This is your opportunity to hit subscribe, to hit follow, to drop some stars, to leave a review if you feel called to do so. It helps us a lot. The more reviews the podcast has, it really supports the credibility of the show. It supports potential listeners who may be thinking about tuning in. And so your thoughts, your words, your time, your stars really is an easy, easy way for you to support. As an indie podcast, as a small business, your supports really help. So thank you so much for considering and taking the time to leave them. Y por otro lado, I would love to stay connected. Follow at Café con Pam Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Check out our website, cafeconpam.com. That's where you can learn about all the things that I do, how we can work together if you're interested, how you can listen and learn more about the various interviews and the different ways that we share stories. It's really cool to be able to have built a platform where we share stories. I'm like, it's just such an honor. And recently I did a closing keynote for a business conference, and it warmed my heart to be able to tell the story of Pam 8 years ago when she had an idea and a microphone she bought online from a retired rapper, and how we have arrived into this moment where we have over 350 stories, and it's just the beginning. And I remember during that speech, actually, I share how I almost quit. And thanks to you listeners, because you don't let me, here we are still. And so we wouldn't be here with over 350 stories if you didn't listen. So thank you. Thank you so much for continuing to show up, for being here week after week, or when you binge us, or whenever, you know, when you tune in. But it does help to subscribe and to rate and review if you're still here. I recorded this in the past, because next week, or the week when you're listening to this, I'm going to be in full-blown move. The week when I'm recording this, I'm packing my old apartment. The week when you are listening to this is when I am going to be unpacking, basically. And so I wanted to make sure that this was recorded in case there were some challenges with the internet, you know, something happens. And so we're being proactive here. Look at me, recovering procrastinator, being proactive. It took me a lot. It's 3 p.m. I'm recording this at 3 p.m. I was supposed to do it at 7 a.m., but hey, we did it. And that's an accomplishment. So listeners, thank you so much for being here today. I so appreciate you. Un abrazote. Y bueno, como siempre, stay shining.